Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Bet of the Book of Sefer Micha, Chapter 2 of the Book of Micha in the OU's Nachyomi Project presentation of Tanakh. And in this Perek, we're going to have encapsulated before us, this is a chapter that encapsulates really much of the scope of things that we've seen in Navi, meaning if you had to, from the Nevi'im that we've all seen together, even only those, and I skipped Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu, where those themes are also there, absolutely, you might say that a brief encapsulation of what Nevi'im tell you is, you're doing bad things, many of them financially bad, and that's going to lead you to be punished, and those punishments will lead you to exile and to times of trouble, and then Hashem will bring you back. So we're going to have that all encapsulated in this parak in today's chapter that we're going to see. So Pasuk Aleph starts with Hoy Choshuvei Aven Ufo'aleira Al Mishkevotam Be'or HaBoker Ya'asua Kiyesh Le'el Yadam. And of course, I'm sorry, as I start to translate this, the way I think, or one productive way to approach Nevi'im, if they're going to say things that are fairly similar one to the other and you're trying to figure out what's going on, one productive approach, I think, is to try to understand what it is about a particular chapter that is different from the ones that came before it, what new there is in this chapter. So here in the first pasuk we already have something, because choshivei aven is people who are planning to do wrong, to do their iniquity, is that here the Navi presents them as planning it ahead of time. Hoy choshivei aven ufo'aleira al mishkavotam. They are thinking of evil, and they're lying in their bed thinking about it. So the image of the lying in the bed, Rashi just thinks that the point that's being made is that it's planning for the next day. In the nighttime, they're already planning what they're going to do in the morning. They've got an anticipation of it. It's not just that this is the way business works. They're planning it out. We're going to see what it is they're planning out in a second, but they're planning it out ahead of time. The Radak thinks that it's not as terrible, I think, is the way he would experience it, because in his reading, it's that when we lie in our beds, when we're relaxed at night, that is when our other senses are less active. And so that's where there's an opening for us to come to have certain kinds of thoughts. So when you read it that way, if you read it that way, it's not so much a focus on the evil they're planning on doing. But then, the end of the pasuk, Be'or HaBoker Ya'asu, in the morning they will do it, Kiyesh Le'el Yadam, because they have the ability, they have the power to do so. So that emphasis on power, I think, is going to be something to follow and watch in this perek. So in Pasuk Bet, we see what they're planning on doing. V'chamdu sadot v'gazalu, they'll long for, or they'll be interested, they'll covet, is the English word. They'll covet the fields, and then they will take them. Uvatim v'nasau, and houses, and they will also take those. V'ashku gevri v'eto, and they'll rob a man and his whole household. V'ish v'nachalato, and they'll take away people's inheritances, people's heritages. So again, those two words are interesting, because we always think of a nachala as an inheritance, something you just happen to get from your forefathers. But in the same way that we often talk about the difference between inheritance and nachala and a misora, that Judaism's tradition is meant to be passed on from generation to generation, so too a nachala, the land of Eretz Yisrael, is something that was meant to be a nachala, meaning not just you got it from your forefathers, but you got it from your forefathers and you passed it on to your children, and it was the family plot, and there was a deep and generations-long connection between each family and its land. So that is what is being broken here. So the lust for money, the interest in fields, the interest in acquisition is what's leading these people to try to steal from each other and take them away from that. Pshikter Abati points out, or notes on one of the Ten Commandments, L'tachmon, you can't covet that which belongs to others. So Amar Rabbi Huna Matzina Shelo Galu Yisrael Meyatzam Ad Shevru La Pasuk V'Chamdu Sadot V'Gazlu Lubatim V'Nasau. That it's not until they let their covetousness get so in the way that they actually stole from others, took from others their own property, that's when we're going to lead into, as the rest of the chapter will talk about, a prediction of Gullah, a prediction of exile. So that what the fundamental underlying sin, and there are many candidates for that, so it's not just one thing perhaps that led to the Churban Beit and to the Galut, but there are many contributors, but some of those contributors we're seeing, and one of them here is the longing for something that belongs to somebody else. The Gemara in Gittin tells an awful story along these lines. It tells the story of a guy who, however it worked out, a man
decides he likes somebody else's wife and would love to take her for himself. So he, and what's, and it's the deviousness of what's going on here that is what's so upsetting, moving, catastrophic, disastrous, awful, terrible about the story. He wants to arrange matters so that she will become his. So he says, you know what, I need to borrow some money. The guy waits until the guy needs to borrow money, right? The man needs to borrow money, the current husband of the wife. So he says to him, send your wife to me and I will lend her the money. So the man sends the wife, and then this terrible person seduces her, and they spend a whole bunch of time together, 3 days in the Gemara. So then the guy comes looking for his wife, says, where's my wife? So he says, I let her go right away, but I heard a rumor that she did inappropriate activities on the way back with whoever she met, meaning she was promiscuous. That's what he says about her to the husband. So the husband says, so what should I do? So the man says, you know, if you listen to me, so this is now the poor man who's been cuckolded is now being given advice by the man who did it, by the adulterer. He says, if you listen to me, I would divorce her. So it gets worse, because then he says, I'd divorce her. You know, her ketubah is a tremendous amount of money. This was back in the time when ketubah were really protections against divorce, so they would name in them huge amounts of money that the husband would be obligated to pay so that they wouldn't lightly divorce their wives. So the man says, I'll lend you the money. So he lends him the money, divorces his wife, gives her the ketubah money. She goes to now this man who she's been having the affair with because she likes him, and they get married. He can't pay back the loan, so he has to work for this man. So the Gemara says, so that's the scene that you have. The former wife with her new lover, they're hanging out together and being served by the former husband, who is crying as he serves them. And the Gemara says, and it was at that moment that the Gzar Din was finally sealed, and there wasn't no more opportunity for tshuva. So this whole idea of covetousness and wanting what other people have, that is what Micha is naming as being the root and source cause of what's going to eventually bring about the destruction.
Ki eight re'ahi. So Hashem says, I am so now planning for this nation, mishpacha being, as the Radak points out, a word for a nation, as we've seen other times. So I am planning for this nation a terrible thing that's going to happen. They're not going to be able to get out of it, meaning they're not going to be able to free themselves from it. They're going to be stuck in a time of trouble, and they're not going to be able to lift their heads, because it's going to be a time, a very bad time. So the Radak thinks the question of not being able to lift your heads is really just a function of the fact that you're going to be under a yoke, and it's an expression of the slavery that they'll be serving. But Rashi notes, it sees it as a separate clause, and you won't be able to walk upright. Rashi says, Bekoma zikufa. So the phrase Bekoma zikufa in rabbinic halakhic literature talks about somebody who has a certain amount of arrogance in them. And I wonder whether, neither Radak nor Rashi say this, but I wonder whether if you think back of Pasuk Aleph, the thing that the Pasuk noted was going to lead to them planning all these evils was Ki Yesh Le'el Yadam, because they have the power to do so. So the focus is on their power to do so. I wonder whether the punishment is not Midah Keneged Midah, right? Hashem, the Gemara tells us, we generally assume that Hashem punishes us measure for measure, that the punishment reflects the original sin that led to the punishment. So that would suggest, just as an aside, that would suggest that people were in times of punishment, at least nations, if they come to believe that it's a punishment from Hashem, the best way to figure out the source or the reason for the punishment would be to try to correlate the punishment that they're getting and then try to think back if they have any crimes that in some way reflect that or correlate to that. So it's not meant to be a random thing where you cannot have any clue as to what Hashem is doing and why Hashem is doing it. It's meant to be that you have the ability to figure out what's going on. You have the ability to understand it from within the punishment itself. So that is one possibility here too. So then it would be Midah Keneged Midah. They were very confident and very sure of their power. That would lead them to, when they wanted something, to believe they could just take it. Right? That's the height of what Lo Tachmon is all about. You see something, you want it, and then you plan on taking it, even though it's not yours, it doesn't belong to you. And therefore, the response to that will be that they're going to be put into slavery, they're going to have the yoke of somebody else upon them, and they won't be able to walk with any more arrogance. Pasuk Dalet, Bayomahu Yisal Lechem Mashal V'Nahan Nihi Niyah Amar Shadod nishadunu chilakami yamir ech yamishli the shovev sadenu yichalek. So in that day when all this happens to you, so yisal lechem mashal. Now Rashi just says yisal lechem mashal means that you will, or those among you will, bemoan your fate. Right? Rashi doesn't say that it's anybody in particular, but the Radak thinks that this mashal is going to be, this elegy, this lament, is going to be said by the former Nevi'e Sheker. Because what the Nevi'e Sheker had said was, everything will be okay, God will protect the temple. They had always been on the side of saying that what you're doing is fine, don't worry about it. Same things that people wanted to hear, and that's why the people would like to follow them, and did tend to follow them, because they said, because we tend to follow those who say things we'd like to hear, even if they're not true. And that's always a challenge, right? I've been doing some reading recently in literature that talks about, if you just let people sort of develop on their own, and you give them positive encouragement, and you're understanding to them, and you let them sort of grow and develop largely on their own, then they will go in a good direction. So it would be nice to think so. I would certainly like to think so. Problem is, the question is that always true, that people learn the lesson they need to learn? So here too, you have these Nevi'e Sheker, who had told the people all along they were doing the right thing. They were false prophets. They told the people, don't worry about it, you're just fine. And then when the time of trouble comes, they themselves are shocked at the Radak hazard. Meaning, so it's unclear how someone becomes a Navi Sheker. If they know all the time that they are completely false, or if they have some kind of an experience that sort of feels to them somewhat like Nivuah. And therefore, they decide that it's Nivuah. So we blame them. So apparently it's well enough that they have some way, they should have had some way of knowing they're doing the wrong thing. But in any case, when the times of trouble come, so the Navi HaSheker will be shocked and will be sorrowed by what's going to happen. I'd also note that the Radak points out that when the Navi Sheker, or whoever is making this lament, is talking about it, so he says, Shadod Nishadunu, we have been robbed, right? They've taken away my people's portion. So the Radak points out that the verb is Nishadunu, is a Nifal. It's happened to us. Right? They've come and they've taken away our fields, and it's being given away to other people, and we're totally ravaged. So if it's happening to us, that would be another example of what I suggested before, that this is a punishment for their overly great sense of themselves as in power. And they abuse their power, but the reason you abuse power is because you think you have power. So if you think you have power as something that really belongs to you, and you misuse it, therefore, the punishment will be the complete and utter loss of power. So we saw it in Pasuk Gimel, that they wouldn't be able to walk upright anymore because they'd have somebody else's power over them. And now in Pasuk Daled, we see the whoever's going to say the lamentations over them, the Navi HaSheker or the regular people, they're going to also emphasize Shadod Nishadun, it's happening to us. Pasuk Hey Lachen Lo Yelecha Mashlich Chevel Bigoral Bikal Hashem, and therefore, so the Radak thinks this is now said towards the Navi HaSheker, meaning the Rashi thinks it's just towards the people in general. This is going to be part of the punishment, that part of the going into exile is going to be that we're no longer going to have, Rashi says, a Mashlich Hevel, somebody who uses a long rope. We've seen it before, that the long ropes, with the way they measured long distances, if you wanted to measure plots of land, you would measure them with a Hevel, so you're not going to have that anymore. Why are you not going to have it? Because you're not going to have land anymore. You're not going to have possessions in Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel, to measure them out with a chevel, with a long cord. But the Radak thinks that its particular curse aimed at, a particular imprecation aimed at the Navi HaSheker, because they gave the false nevuot that led the people to this sense, therefore they will no longer be part of Kehal Hashem. I would just note that this also became a general curse in the Jewish people, or at least in those who use Tanakh language in their discussions with each other. So the Gemara in Kiddushin tells a story about Rav Yehuda sending a message to Rav Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael, and the question was, when you plant a tree, so we all know, or we should know, that the Torah says the first 3 years of the fruit, you're not allowed to use it all, you just have to burn it, you just have to get rid of it. You're not allowed to get any benefit from whatsoever, and that's called Orla. So there were some people who thought that Orla did not apply outside of the land of Israel. So if I have a tree outside the land of Israel, I could use the first 3 years of the fruit. So Rav Yehuda sends a message to Rav Yochanan, is this true? And it says, no, it's not true at all. Tell them it's absolutely not true. They need to be buried, these fruit, meaning they're orla. And he says, and anybody who says, no orla chutz laretz, so he says, lo yehelo nin v'nechet, he should not have a grandchild or a great-grandchild, a descendant, mashlich chevel b'gorel b'kal Hashem our pasuk. That's an example of where this became a way of expressing a curse on somebody, a way of expressing that they would have no future. And that's an important point, right? The worst future we can predict for somebody is that they won't have a future. That's the worst we can
we can say about them. That's the most terrifying prospect that we have, is to let them know that we believe that Hashem is going to deny them any share in the Jewish future. And because that's what we want, that's what we should be wanting, is to be part of the Jewish future, part of the eventual recognition in the world of Hashem's rule, part of all that stuff that we long for every day. So being told that you're not going to be able to be part of it, that is truly a terrible, that you and your descendants will not be part of it, that's truly a terrible prediction. Pasuk Vav, Al Tatifu Yatifu No Yatifu La'ele Lo Yisag Kelimot. So this now fits the Radak's vision of it very well, because he would say, if we've been talking to the Nevi'ei Sheker now, so now we have a pasuk that's talking back to the Nevi'ei, is reflecting what they would have said, what they used to say to the Nevi'ei Ha'emet, to the true prophets. They would say, don't preach, right? Don't preach, don't talk. They say, don't preach to these people, that's no way to preach. There's not going to be any shame coming to overcoming us. So, that's what they say. Rashi, of course, hasn't said that, hadn't agreed with the Radak, or hadn't noted the Radak's view of it, hadn't incorporated that view. So he thinks that that this is being said to Nevi'ei Ha'emet by Hashem, or by the Navi B'Shem Hashem. He's saying to them, don't preach to them anymore, because they're not going to listen to you, and I don't want you to get shame from them. So, of course, in Rashi's reading, it's a little bit strange, because the Nevi'im do continue to try and to come and to give prophecy. So this would just be a note, not so much to the Nevi'im themselves as a note to the Jewish people about what should be said to the Nevi'im, or something along those lines, that the futility of giving these Nevuot would seem to lead in the direction of saying to stop preaching to them. I just recently was speaking somewhere on Tisha B'Av, and somebody came up to me afterwards and said, you know, if what you're saying is true, and I was just trying to understand some Pesukim in Navi, if what you're saying is true, then there's no, you know, then human nature is so terrible that there's no way to improve whatever it is. So that's sort of the question that in this context comes up in terms of how these Nevi'im should handle it. If they know or have the understanding that by and large people are not going to listen to them, should they stop preaching? That would be one strategy to adopt. Or do they keep trying, even though they know the odds are terrible and against them in all of these endeavors? So the evidence of history was that the Nevi'im felt it was their job or their desire to continue trying to preach, even though they knew the odds were against them. So then, according to Rashi, this pasuk would be sort of a note, though, to the Jewish people that they understand the odds they're working against. Pasuk Zayin Ha'amur Beit Yaakov Akatzar Ruach Hashem. So Hashem then notes to the Jewish people. So they say, Beit Yaakov is going to say, is Hashem unable to do any good to us? Is that why we're getting all this bad? Which I personally, this is not what the Navi is saying, but I personally, when I read a pasuk like this, find astounding, because, and I think it's true, I just find it astounding, that the reaction when Hashem brings punishment is this what Hashem does, the way Hashem acts? Hashem is so vengeful, Hashem is so intent on punishing us, how could that be? So the end of the pasuk is Hashem's answer. Hashem's answer is, not true, I have lots of good to give you, I'd love to give you good, imay yashar holech, for those who will go in the right way, in the straight way, in the straight path. And that's the point that Micha is making. The point that Micha is making, B'Shem Hashem, in the name of God, is that there's plenty of good out there for you. Don't look at the punishment that you're going to be getting and saying, oh, this is all Hashem can do. It's not true. But I personally, this is me talking now, I read this pasuk and I say to myself, how could it be that people could react that way? How could it be that we're talking again, and we're seeing over and over again, when you learn, when you scratch the surface of Navi, you find out it's not like they were doing technical crimes that, you know, that would seem to any reasonable observer to be nitpicking, right? They weren't putting on the blech to the right heat before Shabbos, and therefore there's some question about whether or not they may possibly have violated this or this or this. That's not the kind of prohibitions that we're seeing the Nevi'im are complaining about. And so if the Nevi'im are complaining about that they're stealing fields from other, they're coveting fields and they're stealing them and they're taking them wrongly, and then when the punishment comes, the people say, how could it be that Hashem is doing this to us? So I find that disconnect continually surprising and shocking, but it's all throughout Navi, and it's all throughout Jewish history. So Pasuk Ted, Mul Ami Le'oyev Yikomemi Mul Salma Eder Tafshitun Me'ovrim Betach Shuvei Milchama. So this is saying, and what's going to happen to you, Ami Le'oyev Yikomem, is a reflection of what used to be. You're going to have an enemy come against you, and they're going to take away your clothing and everything that belongs to you. And it used to be that you were the ones who sat securely in your houses, and now you're going to be refugees of war. You're going to have to run away from war. And it's a reflection of what used to happen. What used to happen was that you would go into people's houses, the way the Radak reads it at least. You would go into people's houses, and you would take collateral for various loans, and you see the collateral isn't enough, and you have to pay the loan, and you kick them out of their houses. So, as a reflection of your dispossessing them, you will be dispossessed yourselves. Again, the midah kinegan midah aspect of it, again reminding us that if punishment comes to us, there's every reason to expect that if we think through that punishment and come to figure out that there will be something we've done wrong that reflects that punishment that we're getting. Pasuk tet neshe amit tigarishun ribita anugeha me'alo laleha tikhu hadari le'olam. Another aspect of what you did, and this is the issue of unintended consequences, or maybe sometimes intended, but sometimes not intended, that part of what Hashem is punishing them for is the effect they had on the wives of the people that they were stealing from, right? So it would be bad enough if the sin was, I see a good field, I see a guy who has a good field, and I want it, and I figure out a way to arrange it such that he gets dispossessed from his field. So that's one level of crime, one level of sin that has been committed, I have taken away wrongly, by violating lotachmod, by violating the law, the tenth commandment against covetousness, so I've dispossessed him from his house. But at the same time, what I've done is I have also damaged or hurt the wives of these people. So Rashi thinks Neshami Tegarshon is either that the husbands got killed, or even not killed, by virtue of taking away all their money, they have to go and find a living, and they have to work much harder, and they don't have time to spend with their wives, is the way Rashi reads it, and then tikhu hadari olam, you take away all of the wealth that Hashem gave to them, right? Hashem gave them wealth, gave them the way to make a living, and this person is stealing it, so that's an interruption or a breaking into what Hashem had wanted, the way Hashem had wanted the world to work, and doing it. Radak thinks that it's even worse than that, because Radak thinks that really, and this is similar to that story in Gittin that we told before, that what will happen is, since the chome, the person who's coveting the field, is coming all the time to collect the loan, he'll come again and again, and he'll come, and sometimes when he comes, the husband won't be there, so when the husband comes home, and he'll wait to catch the husband, to get the loan paid off, when the husband comes home, he'll see this man over and over again coming to his house, he may come to suspect there's something untoward going on between his wife and this man, and therefore he will divorce her. And that too, and this is a key issue, and that too will be laid at the hands of the person who was the chomed, even though he could honestly say he had no intention of that occurring. Right? In our story in Gittin, it was the intention that that would happen. But he has no intention of that happening. Nonetheless, the pasuk is blaming him for it. So the negative consequences of crimes that we do, of sins that we commit, we apparently can be blamed for them, even if they were not, if they're direct outcomes of our sin, even though we ourselves did not intend those things, nonetheless we seem to bear the consequences of that, and that's going on here. And I think in the Radak's camp, or leaning more towards the Radak's reading, although Rashi also could say that even in Rashi's reading, it was just the fact that you made him work harder that was seen as being a problem, you getting in between the two of them. Maran Erevin says it is prohibited to sleep in the same room as a married couple because of this pasuk, because you're causing them to be separated from each other. And then the Gemara goes on, Rav Yosef says, even if the woman is a nida, meaning, even if the couple says it's okay with them, that's an interesting question. But the Gemara says, even if they tell you, I don't know why they would tell you, but even if it's clear, or if it's in some way we know, that it would be impossible for them to have marital relations. So that's not what you're getting in the way of. You're not getting in the way of their full marital relationship, because it's such a, the situation is such that they are not going to be able to have that kind of relationship that night anyway, halachically, so there's no way you're getting in the way of it. Nonetheless, Rav Yosef is saying you can't do it because you're still getting in the way of whatever they may talk about or whatever kind of relationship they may conduct in private. They don't conduct in front of other people. You're stopping that. So the Gemara seems to be saying, based on our pasuk, that it is prohibited, that it is a problem to interfere in marital relationships, just in terms of marital relationships, not in terms of whether or not they're going to be able to have the physical aspect of the relationship. You're not allowed to get in the way of that. And that is what's going to happen here, and that will all be laid at the doorstep of the people who committed the chimud to begin with. Pasuk Yud, Kumu ulechu kilozot ha-minucha ba'avur tama'a dechabel vechevel nimrat. So Kumu ulechu is the prediction of galut. You have to go up, you're going to have to leave. Because this is not the kind of, so it means literally this is not the resting place, right? This is not the kind of rest, the kind of minucha that Hashem put us in Eretz Yisrael for, to defile the land. And then vechevel nimrat, Rashi says, chevel nimrat means a group of people who gather together with the intent of doing evil, right? They come together knowing to do evil. So either they're just bad people, and that's what Rashi means, that they're evil, but it also means that their value system has mutated so much, has developed so much. So I pointed out before at the beginning of the perek that they're willing to plan it out ahead of time and feel comfortable doing that. Here, not only that, there are plenty of things that we're able to, inside of ourselves, allow ourselves to plan, even though they're evil. But now we're actually saying that it became so accepted that they're willing to also gather together to do evil. And so that's what's going to lead to a galut, is this perversion of this morality, this ability to assume they can do that. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Lu'ish holeich ruach v'sheker kizev, atif lecha layayim v'lashichar v'yam atif ha'am hazeh. If they find a man, the way Rashi has it, now Rashi is coming along to the Nivea Sheker, and the Radak agrees, right? If they find a man who tells them to do the right thing, they won't listen to him and tell him not to give a Nivua, as we've seen in other Nevi'im. But if they find a man who's going along and saying lies and telling them, you know, drink wine and beer and liquor and have a good time, so that's a Matif, that is somebody who speaks to them who they'll listen to. So that's it's a key point, I think, in my life, but the key question, as you know, I see this in the world today, very often people, this is understandable. People go to the preachers, to the talkers, the sermonizers, the whatever you want to call them, who are enjoyable to listen to. That might be human nature. Question becomes, what do you do when it's not just a question of the pleasantness of listening to them, but it's also a question of the message that's being sent, and that people are only willing to accept messages that already fit into their view. So that's a hard question. It's a hard question whether it happens or not. It seems to me personally that you have that on many occasions. People, and you have people in the non-Jewish world, right, just general scholars saying things like this as well, that more and more it seems like people are only willing to listen to those who say things that they already agree with. So if that's really what's going on, so then you have the problem of what's being said here, that they'll only listen to those who are saying what they want to hear. So here too, that's exactly what Micha is saying, that in the time of Micha, the Nevi'im, the prophets who were successful, right, who got their message listened to, were the ones who would say the things that the people wanted to hear. And that's a problem because it's not always true, it might not even often be true, that people want to hear the message that they need to hear. So that is the challenge being laid out by Micha here. And so then, Pasuk Yud Bet, Asof, Asof Yaakov, Kulach, Kabetza, Kabet, Sherit, Yisrael, Yachad, Asimena, Kitzon, Botzra, Ke'eder, B'toch, Hadavrot, Himena, Me'adam. So that's what's going to happen. That's the past, sort of in this Nevuah. Hashem switches to say, but I'm going to gather you all together back to Eretz Yisrael. So Kitzon, Botzra, Rashi thinks it just is a reference to that there's going to be a lot of people. I'm going to gather you all back. It's going to be, the cities are going to be bursting with people, like a flock inside its pen is bursting out with people from the pen. The Radak thinks that when the Jews leave the cities, they're going to be like sheep. I'm sorry, the Radak thinks this is still about the past. I think the Radak in Yud Bet thinks, Kisam Batra, Irg Dolami Adom, Vihi Eretz Mikneh, Amar Shid Mu Yisob, Bevor Cham El Ha'arim. They won't have any power to stand before the Oyev. I'm sorry, I got mixed up because Rashi sees this as being about the future. And that in the future, this is going to happen. They're going to fill up the cities, and Hashem will be coming before them to save them. So I apologize. There's a sharp split between Rashi and Radakia, and that's what's confusing me. Rashi sees it as a prediction about the future, that Hashem will be in at their head, and that will lead them to their salvation, and that's what's going to happen. Radakia thinks, no, this is still about what's going to happen when they're being taken out of Israel into the Galut, that they're going to run from their cities like sheep because of the enemy, but Hashem will have gone before them, meaning like the divine presence will have left Eretz Israel. As we say, the Shechinta Begaluta, that Hashem goes into exile, joins us in exile, that's what the Radak understands it to be. So for Radak, the chapter is not, as I said, about the future as well. It's only about the punishments that are coming, and it's a prediction of those punishments. For Rashi, though, it also is about the future in which we will be redeemed and we will be saved. For Radak, I would note that the reference here to them as being like sheep is another example of what I pointed out as a subtext of the Perek, that in response to their having misused the power that they had when they had it, one of the aspects of their punishment will be the loss of that power, and they will be, in this case, like sheep running before somebody, you know, somebody chasing them and sending them out into exile. So two very different versions of this Perek, very different views of the Perek, of the question, and only at the very end, the beginning parts of the parak are clearly and well understood as being about the response to the Jewish people's failures in terms of their morality, in terms of their understanding of how to properly use power that they have, and the response to that being exile and punishment and loss of exactly that power. We'll see more of this, God willing, in the coming chapters of Micha. Have a great day.